don't want to see you coming back in here with fucking junkies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained junkies.
Look at anybody going sitting up a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Now, the greatest thing about the GA is that you are guaranteed at least once a year that they will manufacture the kind of farcical, new cycle grasping crisis that deserves a Christy Moore song. They've done the expedient thing this time by staging the crisis in his own backyard. And Christy has indeed weighed in on this topic. He's tweeted this afternoon his version of the GA's dream quarterfinals. We've got Garth Brooks against Bruce Springsteen, Ed Sheeran against U2, the Dubs against the Pope. There's only one winner there, obviously. And Rihanna against Conor McGregor, hashtag Newbridge or nowhere. Welcome to the so-called Weaker Podcast here on Bulls.ie. Gavin Cooney's presenting today. That's me. Mick McCarthy has chained himself to a railing at St. Conlon's Park in Newbridge in solidarity with Kildare. But happy to say that Mark Farley and Morris Brosnan are here. Lads, what's the crack?
Oh, sure. Plenty of crack. It's been a mad, mad week at the GA. This is our Saipan almost, I think. It's getting to that stage.
I thought you were going to touch on the fact this is the first podcast me and you've done in a while.
Yeah,
I don't know if you can pick up on it, whatever device you're listening to here. The tension is unbearable in this room. Mark actually jostled me on the way into the room here before the warm-up, before we'd even started recording.
The restraining order is really a bit awkward, given that I'm not allowed within a mile of Morris. So the fact that we've had to record this in separate cities is
problematic.
It's problematic, especially given the lack of cities in Ireland. So I'm in Galway, he's in Dublin.
We will talk about the Kildare crisis in a couple of minutes, but just a little foretell of what else we've got on this week's show. Delighted to be chatting to Leitrim's Emlyn Mulligan after Leitrim's amazing qualifier victory over Louth. We'll also have a very exciting dispatch even from our intrepid Carlow reporter Sean Gannon, as Carlow sadly took their leave of the championship against Tyrone. That plus we'll also be looking ahead to this weekend's action as we guess the spreads. But I guess we might as well start with Kildare. Now, listener, we hope things haven't changed too much by the time that we're recording, but as it stands, Kildare have doubled down on their decision to hold this game in Newbridge.
It's brilliant. It's farcical, but at the same time, where would we be without the entertainment of the whole thing? Like, we'll give out and go, this is a disgrace for the GAA, yada yada. But if it wasn't for the GAA, like, summers would be, I know we've got the World Cup at the minute, but like, they've timed this perfectly to come out and happen. Like, we literally didn't get a single day of the World Cup not having 1 p.m. kickoffs without the GAA releasing this doozy at 1 p.m. on Monday. It was perfectly timed, and it's going to carry us through the week.
And it was almost scripted. They dropped it at 1 o'clock. It was actually leaked first that Kildare were going to turn around and refuse it. Then it's on the 6 o'clock news. Keane O'Neill, the Kildare manager, is on the 6 o'clock news. He leads the bulletin to come on and say that they don't want to play in Croke Park. I woke up this morning, I had an email that they had a press conference this evening. I arrived into work, I have an email that they've cancelled that press conference. the whole thing has been, it's high drama.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to dupe the social media algorithms. They're perfectly timing every development in the story so that we can get maximum return out of the previous development. So like the press conference thing, the announcement that it was going to happen, got a load of speculation off the back of that. What does this mean? What's Keane O'Neill going to say? Yada, yada. Then the press conference is cancelled. And again, loads of speculation off the back of it. What's it? You know, maybe they're pulling out. I thought they'd taken the soup. That's the end of it now. But turns out, no. Press conference is cancelled. And they are rumoured to be officially, Leinster leader said they're officially letting Croke Park know, as in not the stadium, but, you know, as in headquarters, know that they're not going to play the game in Croke Park. Because you have to let them know 48 hours in advance if you're not going to fulfil a fixture.
Are we all pro Kildare stance here?
See, the problem is that you could, when I first heard it, you try and craft a counter argument. So why did the GA do this? So initially I was thinking that it's down to this upgrade that hasn't happened yet. So we're supposed to get an improvement in facilities in Newbridge, and it hasn't happened. So maybe that's what they're going to blame it on, that the fact that a loan that was taken out a while hasn't been fulfilled. Or maybe they're going to blame on the just poor facilities. But the GA's reason themselves, this is one of those unusual situations where normally we would all bemoan how much of a disgrace the GA is, but it becomes kind of an abstract, faceless organisation, and nobody is really held accountable. We've actually had the head of the CCC and Fergal McCall come on to Irish Times yesterday and give interviews and explain their reasons, and they're laughable. They're totally laughable. So even the legitimacy that could have been within their argument has been taken away by their own words, by the fact that they're stating like this idea about capacity issues. We had an argument this morning that there may be an incident, an altercation outside the ground because people are turning up without tickets. Like, is the same thing going to happen for the Cork and Clare game, which is also sold out at the weekend? It's laughable.
The other thing, Neymar, just to be fair, it was an off the ball AM. He didn't say altercation. He said there would be, what was it?
Animosity was the word.
Animosity. there would be, interaction or some sort between the fans. Not crowd trouble, but animosity, whatever that means. Like, I don't know what the difference is.
It's the degrees of scale. It's like Schmozzle at the top.
But it is also horseshit, that excuse. I mean, like, if you, like, the only violence at GAA games is on the pitch, particularly after games. As a Cavan fan here will testify. So no, it's completely bizarre. I mean, there was Kieran Shannon, the Irish Examiner journalist, was making the point on Twitter that if these high profile games aren't taken away, what motivation do you have for redeveloping grounds? And while I'm slightly sympathetic to that point of view, I think the GAA had rules, very clear rules about the where the games can be staged for the third round of the qualifiers that they explained when they were making the draw in Morning Ireland. The first team out gets home advantage unless they're drawn against Division 3 or 4 team, where the Division 3 or 4 team will then get home advantage, obviously. And they tossed it all out by lunchtime. It's crazy.
And the other thing is, if the grounds can't hold, like, there's so many things. The PR around this for them has been kamikaze, really, the way they've treated it. Like, you cannot agree with the GAA's reasoning, but at the same time understand it if they had been, you know, a bit more clear to say, right, look, we want more people at the game. There are so many fans from Kildare and Mayo that if it's held in Newbridge, they're not going to be able to go because Newbridge is too small. It's a big fixture. Wouldn't it be great if we got an extra 10,000, 20,000 into Croke Park? They're able to see the two best matches in the qualifiers to date between Cavan Tyrone and Mayo Kildare. It's a big day out. It's made it into a high profile. It's high profile stakes. It's what you want at this time of the year. And you might say, well, that's all well and good, but, you know, there's the competition element. Kildare want to play at home, yada, yada. But at least then that's an understandable kind of reasoning. You could say, right, well, I can see where you're coming from there. But the fact that they just won't give, just go health and safety and no more comment after that is bonkers. Even if the detail of what the health and safety issues are, like the toilets, I don't know, they're not able to fulfill, you know, they're going to overflow, which is a thing that can happen if it's a sellout Newbridge.
But these things often come as the Trojan horse of wanting to get people to see as many games as possible. But I think that undermines the competitive element and of the entire competitions. And like Keane O'Neill was very good on RT, where he talked about the most important stakeholders here are the players. And the GAA seem to willfully underestimate the power of home advantage. You're going to see it with Dublin in the Super 8s. You saw it with Waterford in the Munster Hurling Championship. You saw the general train in the Hurling Provincial Championship this year was that the home team won. And this is the same again. It's so stupid. One other thing that's really annoyed me about this has been it's the mentioning of Sky Sports involved. Like, Sky Sports have had no say over the moving of these two games to Croke Park. They're going to televise both of them. To the extent where Sky have issued Bowles a statement that says, Sky has introduced red button functionality to cater for all eventualities, including extra time for when we've double headers on our GAA coverage. Sky has absolutely no influence on the selection of venues for live televised matches. In any event, Sky will have crews ready and in place to film this weekend's games, regardless of where they take place. So you've had Colm O'Rourke and Joe Brawley and other, and Sean Cavan on Twitter as well, other Sunday game personalities, for some reason mention Sky Sports in this debate when they're not relevant at all. Like, this Newbridge debate raises enough serious concerns about the association without other people using it to peddle other agendas.
But there's a prevailing theme throughout the association this year alone. Like, we've seen the exact same situation arose in Wicklow when Dublin went to play Wicklow. We've got very similar situations in Donegal when Donegal played Derry. The ticket prices there were £35, that's pounds into the stand. These aren't anything to do with TV rights. There's a betting stream here is gate receipts, and it's a fundamental issue for the GAA. Like, the Leinster final, the crowd was half of what it was 13 years ago. That's 40,000 seats, each of them paying £20 to £30 per seat. Like, that's missing money. That's money that has been accounted for. So you have to make it up somewhere. So the idea that it's anyone else other than the association's decision to say that we can make account for this. Because I don't think anybody is denying the fact that if this game is played in Croke Park, between Kildare and Mayo, they'd put in, 25,000 between the two of them. But the fact is, that misses a fundamental element to sport is that it's not about who can see it, it's about the players, it's about who's playing. And I think the GAA, and it's not just the GAA, but a lot of associations miss that core theme, that this is about the players, and in the interest and the fairness of players, you play it in the home venue.
If Man United get drawn against Macclesfield Town away in the FA Cup, the game is played in Macclesfield Town. It's not moved to Old Trafford because United, all the United fans in the billion they have across the world might miss it. But look at this could all be changed by the time this podcast even goes out. It's changing by the minute. There are two things I think we need to understand here. First of all, I think it's in everybody's interest, including Mayo's, that the game is played in Newbridge because it might be their only chance to get a bit of silverware. And secondly, I think Cavan should now follow suit and refuse to play Tyrone anywhere other than Kingspan Breffni, even if we don't have any grass at the minute on the pitch.
there is a concern that the Kildare County Board will fold. I don't think they will. I think they're as we were coming on to record that they would that they had communicated to Croke Park that they would only fulfil the fixture in Newbridge. But if they were to use this game as leverage to, you know, get a little bit of money out of the GAA, they have local precedent, as I'm sure both of you know, in St. Bridget, who wanted a convent built in Kildare, and when the King of Leinster refused to give her a plot of land to do so, she threatened them by spreading a blanket across all of Leinster.
What?
Yeah. So this is very much the same, you know? Bridget goes to the Leinster, Leinster Council. Bridget goes to the King of Leinster, build me a convent. This, now, the Kildare County Board are going to the Leinster Council, build me a stand, or I'll set this blanket defence on.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, come on, we'll stick with Kildare. That's enough of that. Their hurlers provided one of the most remarkable tales of 2018. I'm sure you saw this, lads. It was in the Christy Ring Cup final against London at Croke Park. James Burke, he scored just the 8 points in the final. It was placed in a medically induced coma at Easter time because he was suffering with bacterial meningitis. He's come out of it, come out of his hospital bed, and guided Kildare to a Christy Ring Cup win against London. 3-19 to 11 points. They now face Antrim in the playoff as to who will play in the Joe McDonagh Cup next year. Elsewhere in those hurling finals in Croke Park on Saturday, Sligo won the Laurie Maher Cup against Lancashire, while Donegal were 2-19 to 18 winners against Warwickshire in the Nicky Rackard Cup. Morris, you saw a bit of these games on TG Cahir. I think you wanted to give a nod to their coverage.
I thought it was brilliant. Yeah, these games were streamed on TG Cahir's YouTube channel, so even though it was a YouTube stream, they still had a full OTB crew. So you got cameras behind goals, which would zoom on the ball, and you also got a main stand camera. James Burke was comfortably the best player in the first half. I think he scored their first 3 points, including, you can go back and watch this, by the way, this is all available on YouTube still, including a hand pass where he threw the hurl from the left to right hand while swapping the ball across. So threw his hurl up in the hand, hand passed the ball off, and then caught the ball again with his right hand. Like, he was comfortably the most talented hurler on the pitch. There's another theme to this, not to go back to the Kildare stuff, but just Kildare, the treatment of Kildare is, after winning the Christy Ring, is also, Joe Quaid is their manager, who's been beating this drum for a while now, that they have to play a playoff after winning the Christy Ring. That playoff has been set for Armagh for 12:15, the same day that the Kildare footballers are going to play this game, this qualifier. So the idea that, and like, I've said this so many times in this podcast, but the idea that they're going to get rid of six teams when it has worked so well in the drum McDonald does not make sense. And you've got everybody within the drum, even Liam Sheedy has been beating this drum as well. Six teams works, so the fact that they're giving a playoff, why not just relegate Laois and let Kildare go up? Kildare, who comfortably won every game in the Christy Ring, I think they finished with a 31 plus score difference. So it doesn't make any sense that you're gonna relegate a team and play a playoff for a competition. Like, the one grievance I think anybody has had with the hurling championship this year, the only grievance is the fact that it's five teams, so there's not a fair spread of games for everybody. And that is actually catered for in the Joe McDonagh. And the GAA have decided in their wisdom to get rid of that one core principle and make it a five-team tournament for next year. The only reason they're doing that is to cater for the Nicky Rackard, so, which was currently 4-3. So it's actually that tier. But that also worked. The problem isn't, it wasn't an issue. It was just the fact that aesthetically it's better to have 4-4 and a 5 than have a 6-4 and a 3. But you're talking about a tier in between that as well. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. On another problem I have with the Joe McDonagh Cup this year is the fact that they're fixing the final in Croke Park for 2:00 on Sunday at the same time as the Munster hurling final.
Yeah, it defies belief.
Like, why? Why not put it at noon? Why not put the Leinster final at 2 and the Munster final at 4?
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to attract a floating hurling audience, you're not going to get it when the Munster hurling final is on.
Yeah.
What the hell?
They're definitely, like, I understand them having it as the curtain raiser in Croke Park to the Leinster final. I think that everybody agrees that should be done. But then swap the games around, have the Leinster final at 2 and the Munster final, which I thought would have been the case anyway, because surely the Munster final is really the showcase. I suppose, obviously, Kilkenny and Galway is also absolutely massive. But, like, the old adage, there is no day apart from that Ireland final is like Munster hurling final day.
Yeah.
Like, surely it should be the main event.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree. Anyway.
But it's good that the Kildare hurlers are going to be able to, like, the fans of Kildare are going to be able to get out and support the hurlers after winning the final, and they haven't fixed the game in a, dare I say, different jurisdiction rather than a different country a few hours before they play in God knows where down the south.
But Joe Quaid is an all-star, an all-star winning player, an all-Ireland winning manager. So he's from Limerick, and he previously did all his work in Limerick with the clubs there. He's also did a lot of great work with the Camogie in Limerick. He explicitly said, after coming to Kildare, he's been there 3 years now, that he has found the treatment of any lower county as a box-ticking exercise. So last year, they played 3 games in 14 days, lost, and were out. Their season was over by May the 6th because of that. And he said this all outright. They decided that after they finished tied on points with Antrim in the league last year, and it affected their summer because they had only 3 games, so they would finish in May 6th. So they decided to prioritise the championship. So didn't win a game in the league this year, finished bottom, but also turned it around and have won a Christy Ring now. But that shouldn't be the case. Like, he shouldn't have to. He's doing that because he knows he's going to have to peak, not even for the Christy Ring final, beyond that again, for a playoff to get into. That's totally against the basis of the competition. Like, if we even had an even spread of this so that he could invest something into a league and then invest something into a championship at least. But they, I've said outright, the league was not our priority because last year we invested in the league and our summer was over by May. Mm. So this year they did it the other way around.
Do Kildare still have a chance against Antrim though? Antrim have, like, I mean, the last thing they want is a relegation.
Well, they bet them, and that's a good point. No, Antrim have a lot of time to prepare for this game. And also,
A lot of time to prepare though, but at the same time, a lot of time for a game you don't want to play that you don't have real interest in when your summer is already over. Like, a lot of times you stew in a negative sort of attitude, you know, a negative mind space.
Maybe, yeah.
Do you know, it's not as Kildare are, you know, that thing of playing a match every week, gathering momentum, yeah, I know it's going to be another thing that's tough on you physically or whatever. But Antrim probably just wanted to, after that was over, after the job done was over and they missed out on getting to the final, they're like, here, look, this is a joke, I want to get back. So the club's going on with their summer, yada yada, and they've just been waiting for this.
And
game.
Even the idea of, I'm actually going to do a massive swing bout here now and agree with you. even the idea of a massive.
The olive branch between himself and Morris.
The dead look in Morris's eyes when he realised I'm going to have to agree with Farrelly here.
But the second half, and that, so the first half was hugely competitive, but about 2 minutes before the end, London's cornerback Murphy got sent off and it totally changed the game. And the second half became a small bit of a procession, whereas the first half was very competitive. Which definitely didn't take its toll as much as a final may have done. Like, the Sligo game was a cracker, like an absolutely stunning game. That surely took its toll, but they don't have a playoff to play, whereas Kildare do. So I think maybe the fact that it wasn't a fully full competitive game might actually help them go into this week. I would love to see, given what Kildare have done this year and the treatment of, and the story about, like, you're talking about Burke, his clubmate Brian is the captain, spoke really, really well the week before this about the league and about trying to hurl. Nasive contributed a huge amount to hurlers to this Kildare team and trying to hurl in a place where hurling is so marginalised. He's spoken really well about that. So I would love to see that come to fruition and hopefully they will win a playoff the weekend.
Also, the bet of the weekend, I just want to give myself and Mick props from last week, especially Mick, I suppose, because I think it was him that really was the driving force behind it. Donegal -3 against Lancashire in the Nicky Rackard Cup final. Knew I should have not put it in the accumulator and just put money on it straight up. But obviously the accumulator that we talked about in the podcast let us down last week because of Leitrim easily beating Louth. They should have listened to Mick with that one. But Donegal came good, and what an amazing season for them. I mean, Antrim obviously are a story of hurling and Ulster that, you know, they're in serious jeopardy getting relegated now. But Donegal have had a brilliant league and now followed it up with a brilliant championship, which is so hard to do, as Kildare were pointing out.
Yeah,
and definitely. 2-star again, Declan Coulter, who we've given a lot of shout outs to on this podcast, again with another 4 points. Niall McKenna, who hurled with Antrim last year and suffered a horrific, I think he went up for a ball, somebody pulled on his hand and he looked down and saw the bone of his hand strutting too. That happened to him last September. He turned around, obviously has transferred since to Donegal and ended up hitting Man of Match performance at the weekend. So it's an unbelievable story.
Mm, definitely. That's a lot of hurling chat. I think it's now time to look back at the football.
1927, 1994, there'll be leaps from people all over Ireland, perhaps all over the world, with tears in the eyes, celebrating the return of the College Championship. The cup goes to lovely Leitrim.
In a weekend dominated by football, undoubtedly the shock of the second round of the qualifiers came at Carrick and Shannon. Leitrim stuck just the 25 points on Louth. Emlyn Mulligan scored 6 of those points, and I'm delighted to say that he joins us on the line now. Emlyn, Shannon Side Radio described it as samba football from Leitrim. I guess you're not going to disagree, are you?
Is that what they described it as? Yeah, it's not too often Leitrim football is described as that, but no, listen, in fairness, if it was one of those days... I suppose everything attacking-wise, especially, everything clicked on the day. And I suppose the return of 21 points out of 25 was a great return from play. And then, I suppose every time we attacked, even in the second half, we always created something. But no, listen, it was a great display. Like, we had some great young lads there, and I'm just glad they expressed themselves on Saturday gone by, because I don't think, they didn't do it against Roscommon, I suppose. But thankfully, it all came to the fore last Saturday night.
Yeah, did you see that level of performance coming? Because I remember tracking your league results and like it was really up and down your scoring returns.
Yeah, like the first few games in the league, now I suppose we finished with a bit of a stronger, we had a stronger maybe panel towards the end of the league, and we did finish strongly with high scores, but we knew it was in us. You know, we had a number of challenge matches played in the last couple of weeks too, and we were scoring big. Whether we believed it or not, we kicked 21 points in play or not, a different story, but there's definitely enough talent there to do it. We started out with a lot more defensive system against Roscommon, and a lot of the lads that would have started against Louth wouldn't have started the first half against Roscommon. So we knew going out straight away we had a more attacking team. We definitely played with a more attacking strategy, which gave us the foundation, to, I suppose, to push on and get them scores or even attempts. But thankfully, yeah, we didn't have a massive amount of wides in that. And listen, you have them days, I suppose, when no matter, I suppose, it just clicks, really. And I think the majority of the forwards nearly all kicked an average of 3 points in play, you know, which is a great return as well, you know, which is a good boost getting into the game at the weekend.
I mean, you referenced at the start there the young lads finally clicking into gear, and I know you spoke after the game about young players not needing to pay attention to criticism online. How satisfactory is it to see them finally perform?
Oh, it's huge, because, you know, I see them week in, week out. I see them at training every night. Yeah. And I see how good they are, and I suppose it's a cliche. Every county says, "Oh, we've some great young lads," but generally we do have some quality talent. Like, you know, and like there's some players there. There's like a young lad there, our wing forward, the last of Dara Rooney. Like, he's only 19. He's in his second year. Like, in every game he's played, he kicked one two against London last year in his debut. He kicked 1-2 against Roscommon last year. He came on. He kicked 2 points from against Roscommon this year. He kicked 3 again last weekend. And I suppose the likes of them young lads, if they were in another county like Kerry or these places, you'd never hear the end of it. But I suppose they don't get the recognition they deserve at times playing with Leitrim. You know, and he's carrying a bit of pressure. Like, he's one of the main forwards you have. And we have a few other lads like Ryan O'Rourke, the same boat in the 20 by 21, again, kicked 3 or 4 points. I suppose there's a different factor with the younger lads. They don't really care what went on in years gone by, whereas I suppose myself, being an older stalwart as a team, I suppose you're worried about outside factors like people on social media and that, whereas I think the younger generation nowadays, I suppose they've grown up with it just doesn't really bother them, you know.
Yeah, Emlyn, I read those quotes about online criticism that you gave to the Leitrim Observer. I wasn't aware that it had been an issue for you guys. How prevalent has it been?
Yeah, like, listen, we do get a lot of criticism. I don't know, maybe sometimes we've great fans, and in fairness they're great from our supporters, but sometimes I suppose people outside, and even my own family, they can be very critical, and I suppose I don't think they understand the resources we're working on sometimes, you know. And I think, like, especially playing Roscommon, like, there's this kind of a notion straight away that Leitrim people are expecting us to beat Roscommon, and at the end of the day, we'd no given right at all, like, to be even compete with, like, Roscommon in terms of the level they're playing at. But I think, listen, like, in fairness, there was a great crowd there at the weekend, and we're all delighted on the pitch, but I suppose that's great for a week or so, but then depending on how we get on the weekend, you know, you'll still have, there'll be the majority of them people will be still stabbing you in the back and saying stuff about you, how pathetic you are and how brutal you are if we get hammered out the gate next Saturday, you know. But that's part and parcel of it. I think that's in every county, really, you know. And
yeah,
I suppose the fact we're such a small county, you probably hear more of it, because you nearly, well, I suppose Leitrim's so small, you nearly know everybody in the county, you know. Yeah. So you're getting a lot of people feel that they come up and give you their personal opinions and things, you know. And but that's part and parcel of it, you know. And I suppose being a senior member of that team, I like to take a lot. more of that on board and let and take the criticism than leaving it to the young lads, you know.
Yeah, but it shouldn't really be part and parcel of it, I don't think, Emlyn. Has all of that experience that you've just mapped out there, has that coloured your experience of intercounty football?
Well, yeah, over the years, I suppose, not so much, well, this year hasn't been too bad. I suppose maybe people are starting to think, well, maybe Leeds tomorrow or whatever, resource-wise, are limited enough. But over the years, I've been subject to a lot of social media abuse over different things. So there's a few instances years ago we got rid of lads over drinking and stuff, and I would have stood up for management and that, and I took a lot of, like, I remember the pages set up on the basis about me and my family and that, you know. And, like, it did get very personal at the time, and I suppose it did affect me at the time. I can remember, like, even our management team at the time, George and Barney, took a lot of flack over it, you know. And I suppose that isn't right, you know, because at the end of the day, and I suppose in my own circumstances, like, I give everything for Leeds, and they come back after injury, and there to the last game of the year, and I don't really leave during the year if it's a case things aren't going well. And I suppose the last thing you want is people criticising you for you giving everything towards your county. But I've grown to live with it, you know. But I suppose it's trying to change people's mindset that it's not right for people to be able to just go onto Twitter or go onto Facebook and start slating people with their lives or that with no punishment for it, you know. And people, yeah. I think it's just too easy nowadays with social media, anyway, that you can just go on in the flick of a couple of buttons and you can say what you want and there's no consequences really, you know.
Yeah, like, would you, maybe there's not too much you can do, but maybe there's some kind of campaign or something the GA or the GPA could lead or something. I'm just kind of spitballing, but like, would you, any kind of initiative to highlight the fact that online abuse is prevalent for everyone, even for players playing in Division 4, like, would you get behind anything that might stamp that out, or would you have any suggestions as to what can be done about it?
Yeah, well, it's very hard to control it. At the end of the day, everyone's an individual, they can do what they want when they get on it. But as you said, like, you see, I read stuff there the whole time about other players, and I suppose players like in Division 1, Division 2 players, like Zayden O'Shea and these people, like, the stuff I do read online about these, and what people are saying about them personally, it's a horrible to read, you know. But I think people at the end of the day, like these men are still amateur footballers, and they're like, and people mightn't think that they read these things, but I can assure you that they do see these things, and it can definitely have a negative effect on them personally in that, you know. And it's like, especially even in our circumstances, if you play a bad game or you get a hammering like Roscommon did, you're nearly scared to step outside the house for a week or two because you're in your own nearly fit of depression as it is. And some people just feel that, I don't know, a lot of people feel that they've a great relationship with county footballers, but at the same time they feel they can say anything they don't want to say to county footballers, because that's just nearly the given thing nowadays, whereas I suppose maybe county footballers accept it. I don't know, but it's going to be a very hard thing to stamp out on it, you know. Yeah. The way social media has gone, it's taken over the world in terms of everybody's lifestyle, so they're never off phones, and it's just too easy access really, you know.
Yeah. So we'll move off this topic in a minute, Emlyn, but like, how do you know of like any direct effect that it's had on you or teammates? Like, I mean, is anyone, like, does it make it harder to go to training? Like, are players dropping out of panels over this kind of stuff, or what kind of effect do you think has it had?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's, in terms of Leitrim, it's very hard to know. Every club's different in terms of the players go back to their clubs, and like, I know for a fact a lot of players go back to clubs, and the people within Leitrim supporters telling them that they're wasting their fucking time as such to get stopped in for the county, and that, I know that's definitely happening around parts of our county, that there's actually people who are in clubs telling them, oh, you're wasting your time with Leitrim, sure, they're not worth a shite, this and that, excuse me language. But that definitely is happening in terms of having a negative effect. And like, players are listening then to their clubs and they're telling them, and I suppose 9 times out of 10 or 90% of the time, maybe you could look and say, well, they're right. Well, maybe you are wasting your time because you're not winning or this and that. But listen, everyone's an individual, you know, and I suppose if I go back to my club and say that to me, I'd be the first to tell them that they were wrong, like, you know, and yeah. I'd never get into that sort of mind frame thinking, yeah, listen, maybe you are right. But again, I can't really speak on behalf of anyone else, really, you know, and I suppose over the years you just learn to kind of look after yourself, number one, you know.
Given, just given the toll that you have to go through to be an intercounty player, as you just outlined there, like, how deep is your satisfaction after a result? Like, we all saw the scenes after the New York game, which was fairly phenomenal. And then again, you know, you go and beat it out. Like, how proud are you after those kind of games, those kind of results even?
Yeah, I know, it's great. Like, it is, it's huge for us. Like, I made the championship in 2008, like, and so, like, that's 10 years ago now. So it's kind of, since then, if you take New York and London out of the equation, we've only had Sligo once in the Connacht Championship. We've only had one win in the Connacht Championship, which is Sligo in 2011. And then since that, we've had three qualifier wins. So I suppose, like, if you take, if we, since the system came in qualifiers, obviously you've had, we've had three wins in the last number of years over, but like, it's not a massive return in terms of, I suppose, you know, the effort you're putting into county football and that. But at the same time, the win like that against Louth, then it does make it all that worthwhile for that them few days. I suppose it makes your week a lot easier. Listen, going into work on Monday or Tuesday morning for lads, I think it gives everyone a peck in their step. But at the same time, we could be knocked straight back down to ground level again come Saturday evening against Monaghan. You know, at the end of the day, like, you're playing one of the best teams in the country. So, like, you know, you don't be long forgetting about that Louth defeat as well. Like, we just forget about that. That's in the past now. So, like, we've only a few days to focus on Monaghan. So it's kind of, it's great to enjoy it for the moment, and it's great to see the fans and the children and all on the pitch afterwards. But give it 2 days later, you've kind of, it's nearly irrelevant. It's kind of forgotten about, you know?
What's the mindset then going into the Monaghan game?
Oh, listen, I suppose when I was on the way to work this morning, listen, the draw is probably the worst draw we could have got, to be honest.
Yeah. You know,
I probably said, looking at it, even I probably would have taken Mayo at this stage before Monaghan. Do you know what I mean? It's kind Monaghan are a good team, and I think they got caught against Fermanagh. But at the same time, we've absolutely nothing to lose, and we're not naive thinking, well, we should be beaten. We're going to go out and try and be as competitive as we are, and we've young lads, and it's another game that will help them progress. And looking at maybe Division 4 next year, you're looking at every game we can is just progressing against these good teams and seeing where we're at, and testing yourself against likes of Conor McManus and these kind of players. So it's a great challenge. It'll be a sunny evening in Carrick-on-Shannon, or sunny afternoon, and hopefully it'll be a great crowd. And again, it's another great occasion for a young Leitrim team to be involved in. There's no expectation. I suppose the result is irrelevant, really. I think the performance is key for us, first and foremost. And after that, listen, whatever happens, happens, you know.
You'll be obviously massive outsiders this weekend, but I do want to ask about, I was following your win in New York on Twitter, and when Leitrim eventually won, it was like Leitrim were portrayed as the evil empire squashing the challenge of the plucky upstarts from New York City. Like, what was that whole experience like?
Ah, the New York trip's a great trip. Well, it is and it isn't a great trip, I suppose. It's a trip you're glad to get over and get away home with the win, but... that game was an outrageous game, in fairness. Like, you know, with a few minutes left, I personally thought we were gone. Like, we were 3 points down, we were about 5 minutes left, and to come back and kick 4 points in that space of time and to win it, you know, and I suppose when you look back on that, how close we were to being put out of it to still being in the championship, you know, there's such a contrast in terms of, like, we could easily have been out of the championship at that stage, and I'm not sure, I think it might have been a qualifier for us if we had. I'm not exactly sure what the rules were, but we hadn't even been thinking about that. But it was a great occasion, and it's always a great trip. Like, that was my third time doing it, being over there playing it, and like, there's a massive Leitrim following over there, and there's a huge Leitrim crowd travelling from home as well. Like, you know, the Gaelic Park doesn't hold that many. I think it said there's 4,000 or 5,000 hold, but there's 6,000 or something like that. So it's a carnival atmosphere, and it's, you know, a few days after, a great crack as well. You're going a good session of drink after, and it's a great time to even bond for a team as well. As you know, you get a good, you're stuck with each other for 6 days, and we wouldn't be too used to bonding weekends, or I suppose training weekends, because financially obviously we can't really do it. So it's great to make use of a trip like that, even just getting to know lads that bit better, you know.
Yeah. I'm just, like, when you talk about Gaelic Park only having 6,000 people, I guess if they ever draw Mayo in the Connacht Championship, that it might be moved to Croke Park. I don't know, do you have an opinion on hashtag Newbridge or nowhere?
Hashtag, if they want, they can put Leitrim up. If they want, they can play Leitrim and Monaghan up there. We'd have no problem going up to Croke Park to play now. But no, listen, I think Kildare are right. Listen, Kildare, in fairness, if it said something before the draw yesterday morning, like, you know, the only two things it said yesterday morning before the draw were that the home team gets home advantage unless it's a Division 3 or 4 team, and Tyrone and Monaghan couldn't play. Like, they can't just come out making up rules after it, like, and then saying, oh, actually, no, we're not playing it here. And in fairness to Kildare, like, they're going to have a far better chance of beating Mayo at home than they are in Croke Park. And at the end of the day, they're an ambitious team to want to push on, so they're not there just fulfilling the fixture for the sake of it. So they want to get into the Super 8. The best opportunity for them to get into it is playing it at home, and they got the fair draw to play at home, and it's only fair that it should be played at home, you know. But again, I suppose the GAA are looking at financially, but surely they've enough money made at this stage that they don't need to be changing some of these games. They've enough out of the Super 8 anyway, you know. But I think they're right, and hopefully it all gets sorted out, and it is a case that the GAA don't go and tell us to walk over for Mayo, because that's not going to do anything, or it's not going to help out anybody, really, you know.
Oh, definitely not.
But we're willing to fill the gap if they want.
I was just saying, Emlyn, I'm from Longford. I'd be happy enough if they wanted to kick Kildare out and draft in Longford to play Mayo. I wouldn't have any problem going up.
Well, I think that because I think Mickey Quinn, as someone was saying, it's all Mickey Quinn's fault. He drew it out of the half, so it's his fault on the end of the day.
Come here, Emlyn.
His fault we got Monaghan as well, so he's not the most popular man at the minute, Mickey.
Emlyn, come here. Thanks so much for joining us. That was a pleasure.
Listen, thanks a million, lads. Take care.
What an evening. What a performance. One of the greatest wins ever by the Rossies. Up to Pier Stadium. Goal went 6-1 on to beat us by 12 points. What happened? The Rossies arrived into town. What did we do? We blew them into Galway Bay.
I guess the romance of Leitrim compensates for the end of the Carlow 2018 romance. It's all over, I'm afraid. They lost to Tyrone at Dr. Netwatch Cullen on Saturday afternoon. And as he has been doing for us throughout the year, Carlow's own Sean Gannon was there to chronicle the end.
I'm joined here by Paul Broderick. This interview was sponsored by Auto Image Carlow. For all your Renault and Dacia needs, just give Simon Ray a call. Paul, it's the end of the year, and what are your thoughts on the year as a whole?
Well, I suppose speaking of end of year, I suppose it's only June, you know, it's got a few months left. But I suppose in football terms, we achieved our goal, you know. Speaking of goals, Darragh O'Brien got a great one yesterday.
You got a goal or two, and that would have helped us.
Yeah, it would have helped us, if that's the way you want to put it. I'm not sure if that's an actual word, Sean, but it definitely would have helped us.
Which word are you unsure of is the word? Helping?
Helping.
Yeah, helping. You see, from a very selfish kind of forward, you wouldn't understand the word helping. That's fair enough. Okay, so let's bring it back, right? Obviously, we lost 3 times the Leash, and they set up very, very well against us. But let's go back to Croke Park. Were you going for goal that time?
I was going for goal that time, yeah, and I suppose I felt that, you know, we needed something to spark us, and obviously...
And a point would have done.
A point would have done, yeah. Again, doing, I'm not really sure that's a word either, but...
point would have done, sorry.
But, yeah, a point probably would have done, Sean, but I suppose, look, the boots weren't they weren't firing that day, you know.
And they definitely weren't. I want to hand over there. I've got Stephen Porter with me as well. Stephen.
He's on the line, is he?
He's on the line. Stephen, thanks for joining us. Apparently, Joe Brawley is a good chap, whatever. Like, but Tara Bryan had a go at him this morning, and he said a Brawley with holes in it is no good. Is that true?
Yeah, Sean, there's facts and there's opinions, and you have to look at the facts. Joe was offensive coach for Antrim in 2008, and Antrim scored 7 points and 8 in their last 2 games. So Joe obviously done a fantastic job.
Fantastic. And how many from play?
I think 3, I think.
3, yeah. Well, same as us yesterday, Stevie. same as us. Back to Paul there. Paul, let's sum up the year. What do you think?
A good year. Look, you know better than anyone where we've come from. And I'm not talking about Carlow Town in that manner. I'm talking about, you know, the Doldrums. And, you know, we're very happy with where we are at the moment. And maybe just yesterday was a step too far. We need to learn from it.
And you haven't actually given us any cliches yet. So have you got a cliche or two for us?
Well, I suppose I have a few apples. I suppose this year I set out. I actually bought a hedge trimmer, sir, very recently. And I set out, you know, Carlow... set out this year to cut the hedge down so we could look over it. But I think Carlow this year we jumped over it, you know. Actually ran the far side of the hedge.
Yeah, it's not quite a score in the bushes, we're 2 in the hand, but it's pretty apt, I suppose. Paul, I appreciate all the help through the year, and I wish the boys the best of luck.
Best of luck, guys.
With the so-called Weaker County podcast. You're doing well. Good luck with the book. That's Sean Kavanagh. Pleasure, and keep rooting for us, we keep rooting for you. I'll see you later on.
Well, that was great. Well, we should say that Joe Brawley has since tweeted himself that his involvement with those Antrim forwards is entirely informal. He wasn't involved in selection. I mean, he's a maximum of 3 and 4 weeks in total.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I love the line from Sean about, oh, that's the same amount of points we got from play yesterday, Stevie. Which is the thing, you can't take yourself too seriously. but yeah, that was lovely from the lads. Thanks very much for the... We'll keep reading for you as well, Carol.
I think he might have touched on something that's kind of... it's a great point, actually, which is the idea that where they've come from. Like I was kind of critical of elements within their system, but by and large, it's been a massive success. And that's kind of... Like, all you're trying to strike a balance between criticizing slight elements of tactically, but while also deservedly praising them for what they've done this year. So my point after the Leash game was that was the game they actually could have won if there was tweaks within it. But that wasn't by any means a criticism of the system they've used this year or how far they've come.
Oh yeah, I mean, you can always you criticize any tactics because unless you end up winning the All-Ireland, then there's definitely flaws in it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
one way of looking at it.
The very nature of it. It's the idea of you don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater, mm-hmm. that there's ways to tweak and ways to improve. And as you said loads of times in the podcast, we know I'm blue in the face saying that not everything has to happen overnight. Like, where was I listening to? It was Oisín McConville, actually, the second captain this week, was talking about the fitness of the Donegal players and how, or of the Dublin players, I think, I mean, sorry. And he was talking to, anyway, he was out running with someone who was a runner in America, and he was talking about how, like, it takes 2 years to get up to that pace and level of the top clubs or top counties are at, which is again a thing of, so you can't turn around tomorrow and decide that you want to be flying over the ground. You can't turn around tomorrow and be play total football or total hurling. It takes time to develop. First thing to get right is your defence. That seems to be sometimes where critics will say that that's all these teams are interested in doing, but come next year maybe Carlow will have moved it on another step. All these other things, you always have to keep developing.
It's a good point in strength and conditioning, because I was doing a piece on Mayo last week, and in the course of my research I learned that because that core group of players have been soldiering for so long, they're at such a really high peak level of fitness and strength and conditioning that it's made it harder for the younger guys to come in and make a contribution, like Conor Loftus and like Keane Hanley and like James Durkin. Okay, they made a bit of one at the weekend. So that's interesting, the sense that there's a feeling that Mayo need to deepen their panel and all of that, but it's almost like the level that the existing panel are at is making it look like they have no strength and depth just because they're at such a
high. It's all a process. I mean, look at, again, Donegal. It went from, I thought Donegal were the best team to watch in 2012 when they won the All-Ireland. As in playing attractive football going forward.
The worst.
No, it was 2011, they were terrible.
Okay.
Then in 2012, they were a counter-attacking team when most teams didn't sit back and try and play the same way. Now everybody's kind of trying to play the same way, so it happens that you can get two teams to cancel each other out. But then Donegal would rip teams apart. They'd win the ball back, they'd bomb forward. The game against Cork, the game against Kerry was brilliant. Then the semi-final against Cork was a complete example of the new generation against the old generation. Cork would win the ball back and they were ponderous, hand-passing it around, not knowing where they were going as Donegal filtered back. It was awful. You're like, where is... You know, that sort of... When you kick it in just because out of frustration. The minute Donegal won it back, they knew exactly what they're doing with the ball. They bomb up the field, score a point. Donegal crowd go wild. It was brilliant to watch.
Yeah.
But the principle of what you're talking about there is, like, going back to what McConville was talking about, mid-range runs. So the example he gave was Owen Ben Gallagher, who was phenomenal at the weekend. So Gallagher would... His first three runs, maybe his players would stay with him. So it's actually a really good point there, because it's only in 4, 5, 6 that he would actually start to press out ahead. And all they're doing, the way that Donegal play now is actually an evolution on the way the 2012 Donegal played, because the 2012 Donegal, they were relying on their opposition to be overcommitted. So you would flood men forward, they'd break over, and a quick counterattack, and that's when they'd score. It was an instant ball in, you get men one-on-one. This Donegal team, even if Fermanagh, as they so often did, had a bank of players on their 45, there's so many runners from deep that it's physically impossible to track every single one of them. So, and that's why, like, that 2012 Donegal team, that was Jim McGuinness sitting down and looking at the strengths within the squad, and we're going to play a system that suits their strengths. Yeah. So we have an inside forward like Colin McFadden. Do we have another one? No, but I can put Michael Murphy in there because I have Neil Gallagher out and they're on the middle. We've got a load of really quick ball carriers, for want of a better phrase, the likes of Carl Lacey, that I'm going to use. And that's where the likes of Carlo need to get, or the likes of Cork need to get. So, for example, both of those two teams have outstanding inside forwards in Connolly and Broderick. And in both cases, those players are spending a huge amount of time out the field tracking runners. Instead of somebody coordinating with somebody that you track that so I can stay in, when we turn the ball over, I'm there, I'm available. That's where those teams need to get. So it's all it takes is looking at, like, the elements of the system itself are fine. It's just small tweaks. And it's the same thing with Fermanagh, by the way. Like, Fermanagh, it defies belief. that Tomas Carrigan is not getting more game time, it's funny to me. I know he came back from an injury, but the fact he himself has spoken out about being frustrated about this impact, so but now he understands it's a team game and he actually likened it to Dublin come off the bench. But that, for me, that doesn't cut it, because he's one of your star quality forwards. So if you can infiltrate him into your system, you have to. You just have to.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Fermanagh have the ability to possibly play the way Leash played as well, with Quigley's as ball winners in the full forward line, if you can accommodate the two of them and have Carrigan playing off them.
But what happens instead is that they start Kieran Carrigan. So what Kieran Carrigan is a fine player, but Sean started, he kicked 5 points, his brother came on, Tomas Carrigan didn't come on. So what happens instead is that when Omban Gallagher makes a break run through, Quigley is the man who tracks him. So, for example, if you watch back the first goal, the first score of the game, the last line of defence, the last player who's at the edge of the squad is Quigley. Now, that they're doing that because if your man tracks, you have to track him. That's a rule. But that shouldn't happen. You should be able to coordinate with another man that you take him. Because if we turn over the ball, we've got nobody to aim for because we have our runners tracking back. So Quigley shouldn't be tracking that run. And then, therefore, you can work a player like Tomas Carrigan into that game where he's not also having to track back, which he does really well, by the way. But you could still have it so that you could coordinate with him. Listen, you tag him. I need to stay up here because I'm our best ball winner and our best score getter.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Just briefly, run through the last, the qualifiers. Longford's Championship Odyssey is out. Just a message to Croke Park, by the way, and the GA, that if you do want to draft in Longford to play Mayo instead of Kildare, I'd have no problem going to Croke Park for that game. I doubt any of the rest of us would. Let's just leave that message with you. You went to a fight between Cavan and Down and a football match broke out for a few minutes.
But this is the weirdest game ever, because first of all, I missed the first 20 minutes of it. I was coming back from Limerick, got delayed. So I actually missed, I was walking down, I couldn't get anywhere, I couldn't get parked around Enniskillen for ages. So I was in Enniskillen at 5 o'clock, but didn't get into the grounds until 20 past five. And as I'm walking down, you can see the scoreboard, and there's just the scoreboard just keeps changing. And it was like 7-6 to Cavan. And I was like, this looks like a brilliant game from what I can see by just the scoreboard changing. It was like watching a game on teletext. got into the grounds, and from the moment I sat down, the game just fell apart, I thought, as a spectacle. My analysis of it was not to sound like the lads in the Sunday game, but the worst possible outcome for both sides would have been a draw, because it would have meant the fans would have to sit through extra time. So we were just happy to get out of there, never mind get out of there with a win. But then tune into the Sunday game on Sunday night, and Tomás O'Shea says that the two boys, himself and Ciarán Whelan, watched all the game on Sunday morning and that it was brilliant and highly entertaining. It's like, what the name of God? This is am I living in an opposite land where I've turned into Joe Brawley and the Sunday game battle are talking
Des
about...
Cahill bloody loved it. He threw to mention how entertaining it was twice, three times. Just brief word on the ruckus after the game. Like, it did seem monumentally stupid from where I'm sitting. I'm going
to
disagree.
That one was hard to see. What I could see, the first one was the black card thing, which was incredibly Kevin stupid McKiernan. And funny. Yeah, so I know, look, it's very frustrating sometimes when you think referee decisions are going against you unfairly. Harrison, from what I see in the TV footage, you could see Killian Brady from Cavan went down after the ball had gone, turned around to the linesman and vehemently was shouting at him, look, do you see that, blah, blah, that Harrison had reached out and tripped him. Now, you can see that he definitely gets tripped by Harrison, whether it was accidental or intentional, on the TV footage. But, so the assistant ref, or the linesman, I'm talking soccer terms, they can hear the World Cup in the background, but the linesman calls the attention to the referee about the black card for Harrison. Referee goes over to give Harrison the black card. Kevin McKiernan goes nuts at the linesman. He's roaring at him, like, Tom, we were 100 metres away, how could you see that?
We want to be on the Sunday game.
Yeah, you just want to be on the Sunday game. You want to get on the Sunday game. You get on the Sunday game, blah, blah, blah. Walks off, linesman, two funny things with this. One, Cavan fans who have spent a lifetime of calling, you know, linesmen's blind bollocks and the like, stopped for that, took a brief respite from that to say, linesman, you can't let him talk to you like that. And then McKiernan gets the black card, is walking off, and another Cavan fan roars at him, now, you'll be the one on the Sunday game, you bollocks. But then the row at the end, we didn't really see it, because everybody goes to get up, and because I was on the hill, so you couldn't see anything exact, apart from Killian Clark falling over, trying to run into it, he was Merishka. But I didn't see any hits actually being thrown, because it's just a load of people in a big, you know, sort of schmozzle instance, and then they were all separated and we walked out of the grounds and then could hear two cheers, which I presume was the red cards being handed out.
Yeah.
But then on the Sunday game footage, it looks a lot worse.
It does. It looks...
And it's so ridiculous.
It is ridiculous because now, obviously, Conor Moynihan and Darren McFeely will miss Cavan's game against Tyrone. Other games, Armagh 119-113 winning against Sligo. Didn't mention Mayo. They did beat Tipperary. I did tweet midway through the first half that Mayo are in serious trouble here, thinking, well, they'll respond to that. And Mayo people, they did. So you can thank me for that. As I mentioned, Cavan beating Down. Monaghan and Unholy hammering on Waterford and Fairfield 5-21 to 9 points. That's all the qualifiers. Oh, and Offaly lost narrowly to Clare. I think we're all taken by Paul Rouse's hat.
His cap, yeah, more than anything.
Hope he comes back next year with that hat. No one seems to agree. we've talked about briefly the Munster and Leinster finals. Obviously, the whole thing, like the entire structure is a farce, and we all agree and understand that. So let's not talk about that. I mean, have we anything to add to the Munster or Leinster? That Munster final was the biggest winning margin in a Munster final in 80 years, Bernie.
Well, yeah, Kerry, two things. One, again, don't want to gloat, but our prediction last week in the handicap, that Kerry were, my prediction that Kerry were easily going to beat it. Looked in doubt at the start, but then Kerry's forward line is absolutely immense. I think they could challenge the Dubs this year.
Oh, I know that's a not
a mad,
now.
A mad
heard,
prediction.
Haven't I mean, heard this before.
I think the second favourites for the All-Ireland could challenge the favourites. But like, I think even in the league, remember being at the league in the first 20 minutes of the game between them, like Dublin won it easily in the end. What was it, 8 or 9 points in the league? But I thought Kerry were very good for a long period in that, and they just kind of fell away. The lack of experience and whatever, and some of them hadn't played, obviously, like Lacey Clifford and was Sean O'Shea playing that day? I can't remember.
He went off injured, didn't he, at half time?
Yeah, and that was one of the losses, actually. But also the fact that they'd never played in Croke Park against Dublin. You know, they'd be a little bit more seasoned now should they meet in the championship. But I think they're ready. I know you might think they're a year or two away from it yet, but I think this year could be the year.
Their only concern is that the same problems as last year still remain. So you're still, Crowley was in at fullback. Jason Foley was wearing two, but didn't seem to be playing, at fullback for a while, but then it was Crowley. You're still kind of looking at centre-back. So the same, they've kicked on from, their forwards are definitely better than last year. Their midfielders is good. Gavin White is an absolute gem of a player. That for him to be able to compliment, so initially Paul Murphy was on Rudine, who cost unholy wreck at the start of that game. But then Gavin White, who's a debutant this year, was swapped over and picked him up. Like, that's a massive statement of how good he is, I think, from Infamous Morris.
Is he a Kerry Jack McCaffrey? Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. Like, Jack McCaffrey was associated with just unholy pace, but Gavin White is also a really good man marker. So he judges when to get a ball in, when to spoil ball really, really well. He's really effective. Like, I'm not saying he's better than Jack McCaffrey, but he's really effective on both sides of the ball.
Okay.
Whereas, like, McCaffrey, even when he came on against Leash, The main thing that you know sort of is how quick this guy is. So he gets the ball. And you can't, this is what I'm talking about again with Owen Byrne Gallagher. And it's actually, these are the kind of players that are going to define football now. It's the likes of Fenton and Gallagher and McCaffrey and even like Gavin White to a lesser extent.
In a way, fullbacks have done in soccer in the last 15
precisely,
years.
Precisely. Yeah, precisely. That these are the players that will be really, really effective when they don't have the ball. But when they do have the ball,
these guys have space to run into.
And they're so quick that the problem for a wing forward is to live with them is almost impossible. Like, you've got a guy like Jack McCaffrey or like Omar Gallagher. It doesn't matter. A wing forward will traditionally be fast, but that doesn't matter when you've got guys like these guys because they're going to be faster. So if you are going to play a system where your main job is to track this man so that this man is accounted for, you're coming back with him. It doesn't work because you can't. You can't live with him. You need somebody else. It becomes a situation where you need to delegate somebody else. Either A, you're staying ball side or goal side the whole time, which therefore you become a man marker of a wing back and you're taking totally out of the game, or else you need to dedicate somebody else. You need to pick him up and I'll pick up your man. Galway got a lot of slack because they were pointing to this thing about, you know, pointing at another man, but what they're doing is dedicating a man, so it's clearly accounted for. So that if you go to a Galway game, at times they'll call my man and they'll hold up their hand, and what they're doing is taking account for who they are marking. That's all it is, because when you've got men like these breaking forward at such pace, it's so hard to actually account for them. And that's what happened against Fermanagh. Fermanagh had all their men back, but they couldn't stay with Owen Byrne Gallagher. They couldn't stay McNeilish when he started dropping back. Or Roy McHugh is the classic example. It's so hard to mark him because when he gets a run in it, you're not going to catch him.
This was interesting when Michael Hannan from Cavan was talking about it before. There are two different interesting things in this. One was the idea of a pressing game and not from the Galway match, not people not understanding. It was just a coincidence that he talked that it was an article in the Anglo-Celt in the Cavan newspaper before precisely what he was talking about happened in the Cavan Down game. But he was on it in regards to the Galway game of people not fully understanding what the press is in general in the GAA, and that you assume it's like getting players behind the ball and then pushing out on a team, you know, constantly. The same in,
well, you hear
in
it,
soccer. It's
well, you hear it on the opposition kick out in a full court press. Like that's that's where you hear about it most often. So what does it actually mean?
Well, then maybe there's that, but also in open play more.
Oh, right, okay.
Like, you know, it's pressure on the opposition, but it usually you envisage it that you're pushing out on them or pushing up on them. Mm. Whereas there's also the press back. So like being able to pressurize from, you know, leaving men up that they can actually push back on the team, which is something that, again, when I said Cavan Down game, which you could see, where they're putting everybody behind the ball. Literally, a team, both teams had 15 men behind the ball. And there was one score where Down kept the ball for 3 minutes, I'd say, in the second half. They must have just kept passing it around, couldn't get inside the scoring zone because Cavan had all the players back. Crowd gets agitated. Cavan players start to push out a bit. And this is the bit you go, oh, we'll press now. 5 players went out. Ball was passed laterally to the midfielder. Midfielder feigned as if he was going to pass it backwards again. 5 Cavan players completely taken out of it by the one fake move. Midfielder goes storming through, sets up a point. That was because you couldn't press from behind. You couldn't press the forwards, couldn't press backwards because there was nobody there. So there was never any pressure on Down to actually lose the ball because no one was able to get out and get a hand on because they had like 10 lads lined up to just pass the ball off. But the other part of it, which is in relation to this, in terms of the wing back as well, is the idea of counter-attacking with pace. So it's the two things, you know, either press or you counter-attack with pace. When you envisage counter-attacking with pace or attacking with pace, Gavin, what do you see? Or what do you, in your mind's eye, what is it?
Attacking with pace?
Yeah.
It's where you've got a wing back or wing forward galloping down the wing, attacking with a great degree of speed or pace.
Yeah, exactly. But like, that's my thing is the Donegal 2012 thing of you get back, you're winning the ball inside your own 45, and then like 5 lads are bombing forward together. Monaghan are brilliant at doing it as well. Carl O'Connell and other guys coming off the shoulder, intersecting, you know, the 3-man weave, as you call it, in training, where it's like lads coming off each other's shoulder running at it. And I was playing a junior B game the other day, and I remember like the same thing was happening. They were bringing players back, and then you win the ball back, and it's like, you know, now I'm going to attack with pace, and you go bombing up the field, and you're going as fast as you can. So what happened? Get to the opposition 45, they had players back. I just slow down, hand pass it off to the half forward who's there and sort of just, you know, get out of the way then. And I started to think of, what am I doing here? This isn't attacking with pace. This is attacking slowly. Because what I've done is I could have passed to the half forward the second I got the ball with a foot pass. There was nobody in between 2:45. There was nobody there on the pitch. I could have literally just kicked it in front of him. Even if it was 5 yards, 10 yards either side of him, once it popped in front of him, he would have been first to it. And that clearly would have gotten up the pitch faster than me running. What I actually did was ran where I could easily run and then slowed the game down by passing it to the half forward. And then he had to turn around. He had nowhere to go because there was no pace in the attack. Whereas what you need to be able to do is introduce pace inside the opposition's 45-metre line, which is what the likes of the attacker, the likes of Ryan McHugh, is brilliant at doing. The angles that they come off each other, the same with Dublin, as Hannan was pointing out. It's the way that they can introduce pace in that zone that's essential. Not having 10 lads being able to sprint up the field from your own 21.
Yeah, if only we were all as introspective and analytical of ourselves as you are. Also, I mean, just as a word of warning for when the Sunday game want to do this exact package on air, they can have the little caption, GAA gun pressing. For free. Come here briefly in the Leinster final, Mark. I know you're eager to talk about this.
Yeah, well, last week we had some stats provided to us by Sure, the official statistics partner of the GAA, and it was actually really interesting. I was writing the piece up afterwards as well, and I was like, this is going to be something that we remember saying, regardless of the result, everybody expected Dublin to win. This was going to be something interesting to watch out for, which was the whole thing about the kickouts, the battle for the kickouts in both the Dublin kickouts and the Laois kickouts. Laois wanting to kick them short. Dublin wanted to kick them short. How is it going to pan out? And again, the whole idea of the press. Dublin pressed Laois's kick out. Laois did not. And you could see, like, it actually had such a big impact in the way the game unfolded. Mm-hmm. For the first 10 or 15 minutes, like, Laois took a while to get off the board in terms of getting a score. They had about, three, four kickouts before Brody was actually able to kick one short. It had gotten to the point for the third kickout, it was a wide. I was off the back of a wide from Eric Lowndes. And he had the ball hadn't even gone out of play before Brody was running around to fetch the ball from behind the goals. You've talked about this before, Morris, a lot. But if you look back at, sure, again, I've provided us with some statistics. Dublin, they had 23 kickouts. They won 19. Leash at 34. They only won 23. The first kickout.
34 kickouts.
Yeah, and the first kickout that they managed to get short, Brody got it back again, exactly as what you had alluded to before. And they went up the field and got a score. And then, like, they never pressured the kick out at all in the first half. The first one they did in the second half, I think it was Kingston won it, but then conceded a free. I think he was given for, I can't remember what it was like a hand on the ground or something innocuous enough. But, like, if he had actually been able to gather that ball and break forward, they were through 1-1 with Comerford.
Yeah. Paul Gavin made this point in the Sunday Times at Sunday that Dublin will never give you a quick kick out. They'll let you go short if you want, but they'll be set.
Just on that, what you're talking, like, the Dublin are an example that I might maybe just leave that aside for a second, but there's elements within that. Like, Fermanagh at the weekend, their kick out of facility literally defied belief, especially given this season they themselves have been really innovative with the kick out. So what they did in Croke Park, they played Armagh in the league final in Croke Park, and the Gallagher's brother was behind the goal feeding their keeper balls, and the only reason was four quick kick outs. And instead, against Donegal, they repeatedly blared the ball long. We're taking, like, lingering over their kick-out, so not even any ball beside your goal, which is obviously so important to this. Like, Cluxton with his bag of balls, for example. They're lingering over the ball and then booting it long and never showing any sort of innovation or trying to get it out quickly or trying to get primary possession. So they're trying to, we're trying to make it a 50-50 contest out the field, and you're showing no kind of innovation. And it's the same thing that happened to Roscommon. Roscommon against Galway in the second half particularly lost their primary ball winner around the middle of the park because he went off injured and decided to keep kicking it out long even though he was gone. So they ended up losing the vast majority of their own kickouts. And the only time they did go long was because the keeper wasn't comfortable going long. Sorry, the only time they did go short was because he wasn't comfortable going short. And he was running 30 yards to collect the ball that had gone wide instead of having them there. Like Brody doesn't even use a tee. Brody has a ball there, he grabs it and he's going. Which is why what Dublin do was so effective, because Dublin are immediately set. So what he was doing with that ball and wide was trying to introduce that pace that literally, before Dublin have set, I'm going to kick this ball off with my corner back, which eventually it worked, because that's what he was trying to do. But Dublin are so good at countering that oftentimes it won't. Whereas that wasn't the case for Mana. For Mana just continually decided we're going to go long with our kickouts to avoid. I think what they're trying to avoid is losing the ball in a really uncompromising position where you get turned over beside your own 45. But what actually happened was they never even gained the ball in the first place to do that. So it was relentless pressure. Jim McGuinness wrote about this in the Irish Times. And Mark, you actually referenced it before. What a lot of times Donegal weren't winning the Fermanagh kick out clean. What they're doing is breaking ball. But then because they're pushing men from the back forward, so you've got your cornerbacks and your wingbacks, and they're not standing, like, if they're ahead of the ball, they're not standing in front of their men, they're behind their men, because they're not the primary target. So when the ball breaks, they're in a perfect situation to gather the ball, as opposed to trying to get out in front, and then all of a sudden the ball breaks and you're on the wrong side of the breaking ball, if that makes sense. So Donegal definitely had a good system in terms of their kick-out strategy, but Fermanagh didn't help themselves, and they didn't help themselves because they continually kicked it long, but not, and maybe it's, I think this is definitely what happened with the Roscommon keeper, based off the evidence, isn't comfortable going short. And this is again what we're talking about the likes of Brody, about how, you know, essential a goalkeeper is now becoming, and not just in terms of being a good shot stopper, in terms of actually being able to pinpoint out his kickouts, in terms of contribute. Like Jim McGuinness, once again, he called Brody a plus one, and that's, like, at its fundamental, that's what you're trying to do in football. If you just got a plus one, a man over continually, that's how you end up getting a score. So and that's what Brody can introduce, that at the other end of the field. Now sometimes he's just at the other opposite end of the field too, if he continues his run. But that's all you're trying to do with your kickers. And even if you do go short, for the likes of Fana, he doesn't have to get that ball back. But at least you've gained primary possession, and then you can start to build from that. If you don't have primary possession, you don't have any platform.
Yeah.
Just lastly on Brody as well, just to give him a mention, and like I was saying, the stats that Shore provided, they lost 11 kickouts. A lot of them were at the start of the game where they were kind of a little ruffled because they weren't able to kick it short. But after a while, like midway through the first half, Brody came to terms with it. And if you had to kick it long, they were winning. Both him and John Loughton especially was brilliant at the middle of the field. His kickouts, Brody's kickouts long, were exceptional as well. Like we had said going into the game last week when we were previewing it, that is Brody going to be able to do this if he's forced to kick it long? If Comerford's forced to kick it long, will they be able to win their own kickout? And Brody's kickouts were exceptional. I knew that the loss was just the sheer pressure that Dublin were putting on them.
But yeah. We always speculated as to how big a potential loss Stephen Cluxton would be to Dublin. But from what you're reading me there, not massively. Yeah. It sounds like Evan Comerford's possibly going to be just as good.
He probably is going to. Like, he's still young and his shot kickers are definitely brilliant, but they weren't put under the pressure that they could have been. They weren't put, like, I mean, it was immense the pressure that was put on the leash kickout.
Yeah.
Like, it's absolutely. And there was, again,
it's why Mayo
a great
actually,
piece of analysis on the Sunday game as well.
It's why Mayo have been so competitive with Dublin is because they actually have the quality of defender to back themselves man on man.
Yeah, exactly.
So they can afford to, like you were mentioning with Donegal, you can actually afford to, you know, press.
Yeah, but even in the Sunday game, sorry, just one thing on the Longford thing, that Brawley pinpointed showed like the Longford, Dublin actually given Longford a short kick out so that Paddy Andrews could nail the Longford defender with a shoulder and the ball dropped Mannion and put it at the back of the net.
But the only time we've seen Cluxton really crack when he gave away the penalty
was in Kerry.
And that was, what Kerry were doing there was anytime they couldn't organise the press well enough if it was a primary possession. So if there was from a set piece, they could then organise their press. So that's all they were doing. But the full court press. Like that was what Kerry were doing. And that was all of a sudden Cluxton blared the ball over a sideline and you could see he was rattled by it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he definitely was. Okay, that's enough chat about last weekend and 2016 and Donegal team of 2012 for some reason. Right, so to very briefly look ahead to this weekend's games with a little competition called Guess the Spread. There are 4 football qualifiers, the McDonagh Ring playoff on Saturday morning. Then we've got the McDonagh Cup final and the Munster Hurling final and then the Leinster Hurling final as well at Croke Park. So I've got the betting spread from all these games and you're just going to have to guess what it is. This all seems, we can all follow this. This is how I meant to do it, what I'm really asking there. Okay, so let's start. We're going to run through things chronologically. Beginning on Saturday morning at 12:45 for the McDonagh Ring playoff between Kildare and Antrim.
Saturday afternoon, I hope. Surely the GAA haven't got that bad that they're playing poor Kildare, making poor Kildare play at 12:45 in the morning.
Sorry, yeah. Well, you never really know. Yeah, no. 45 minutes afternoon. Right. Kildare and Antrim. Who gets first? Let's go Farley first.
Oh, no. I wanted Morris to go first in this one so I'd have some context. I'm going to go with Antrim are +4.
Okay.
I'm going to say 3.
But Antrim plus 3, sorry.
Three was my instinct.
Cool. Antrim -4 is the answer.
Oh, sorry, what am I saying? Antrim -4 is what I meant to say.
Well, you said plus, so you're out. So,
I know. Morris, what
Morris
did you mean?
Gets that.
I meant -3.
Yeah.
Both cool. of us meant -3. Why did I say plus?
I have to say, like, what you actually say into the mic is what you say, you know?
I meant so, -4.
I guess Morris gets the point on that one for being slightly closer. So 1-0 to Morris.
Great. I was nailed on.
Let's go football qualifiers. Leitrim, Monaghan. Morris first.
I'm going to say Monaghan -11.
Okay, Farley.
I did this last week and I'm not going to do it again this week. I also had Monaghan -11 and I'm not changing this week when we have the same one. I'm going to stick with it.
Okay, Monaghan -13. So I guess it's pushed. No points either. So it remains 1-0 to Morris. Armagh, Clare. Farley gets first guess.
Armagh -2.
Okay, Morris?
I was going to do the same thing, but I'm not going to. I'm going to say Armagh -1.
You fool, Morris Brosnan. It's Armagh -2. Farley back in the game at 1-0. Cavan Tyrone, Morris?
I'm going to say Tyrone -4.
Okay,
Tyrone Farley. -5.
Tyrone -4 is the correct answer. So I have 2-1 to Morris. We're going on to Kildare Mayo at a venue yet to be decided. Who gets first pick? Farley.
Mayo -3.
Okay, Morris.
Mayo -4.
Oh, it's a potentially fatal blow for Morris. Mayo -4 is the correct answer. He moves into a 3-1 lead as he moves to the final three games on Sunday. The Joe McDonagh Cup final between Westmeath and Carlow. We're going to give it to Morris first.
I'm going to say Carlow have beaten 3 times this year. Carlow -2.
Carlow -2. Farley.
I think Westmeath could be favourites for this.
They definitely are, you know.
I'm going to go Westmeath -1.
Westmeath -2 is the correct answer. So Farley's back in the game. 3-2 with two games remaining. Morris can seal this if he can get closer on the Munster hurling final between Cork and Clare. But Farrelly, you get first pick.
Cork minus 3.
No, I'm saying Cork minus 1.
Cork minus 1 is bang on.
No, this technically isn't a win. I meant to say minus 4. I clearly meant to say, Antrim are clearly favours for it. I meant to say minus 4, not plus 4. It was a slip of the tongue.
He was rattled by the first answer.
And finally, the Leinster hurling final between Galway and Kilkenny. Farrelly.
Galway.
Doing this now, less for pride than just a heavy defeat, really.
Wait, no, Morris went, I went first last time.
Oh,
Morris,
did you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to say Galway minus 2.
Okay. Back to Farrelly.
Well, I also want to say minus 2, but we can't. I have to do something to pull batting pride here. Galway minus 1.
Galway minus 4, meaning Morris is slightly closer. That means he wins 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 2.
That's all right. I can take that now because it's technically 4-3, but that's all right.
That's pretty comprehensive. Guys, thank you very much. There's a packed show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Do remember to subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. Search balls.ie wherever you get your podcast. Leave us a rating or a comment. Do all those things that people do with podcasts. But above all, keep on listening. We're going to be back next week from Morris, Mark, and me and Mick, chained to a raining summer in Newbridge. Goodbye.
Ciao.